Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interviews.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I know. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker.
Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
The shot from the ties for your makeup. Because I make you ugly.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you, wherever you may be. As the introduction suggested, I am Jeffrey Wright. Let's tell you what's coming up on the program. Jeff Calkins is making his way all the way down to Baton Rouge. Of course, the Tigers taking on the Bayou Bengals, the LSU Tigers tonight. You can see that game, of course, on SEC Network. Jeff's going to join us from the road, as he will so often do. We are very grateful for that. Of course, we'll discuss Grizzlies, Tigers, as well as some Penny Hardaway and more with Jeff when he joins us. Then, of course, Gary Parrish joins us, as he does each and every Tuesday. Then in the second hour, of course, Chris Harrington will join us to discuss the Grizzlies and more. We'll do some big facts in the second hour, and then we'll make way for some real talent with the Jason and John show. But now, without further ado, we welcome on the man that lends his name to the program. He, of course, is Jeff Calkins. Jeff, good day, sir.
Jeffrey, how are you?
I'm doing well. So you are on your road. You're on your way down to Baton Rouge. Of course, the Tigers taking on LSU tonight. You want to start first with the Tigers, or you want to start with the Grizz?
Let's start with the Grizz. We'll get to the Tigers. Grizz finally obviously lose a game at home, and that's too bad. You know, we never like to see that happen. It was an interesting game, though, for a couple of reasons, I thought. One is it looked much more like it looked to me to be what you – might be worried this team would look like when the season began, which is counting heavily on Mark and Mike with not enough firepower coming from elsewhere. Now, as the season has played out, that's not what has happened. Mike has been off, and they have gotten contributions from elsewhere. But last night, if Mike wasn't scoring, and that was the nice part of the game, is now it's two straight games where Mike's was good with 24 points last night. But, you know, the rest of the team was 1 of 16 from deep. So, they were looking to Mike, and it was one of these deals where, okay, this is what I worried that they'd be like when they had all these veterans, but a distinct lack of firepower. This is what you get. I mean, it was an ugly game. Obviously, they got off to this hideous start, down 13-2. The Jazz very clearly, and I do think these things matter over an 82-game season, various things motivate you or fail to motivate you or whatever else. And this one, you know, very clearly the Jazz are irritated that they lost twice to the Grizzlies. So they come out, they get up to the 13-2 start. The Grizzlies can't hit a shot. It was atrocious beginning to the game, but they get back into it, and then I do think that they had this issue where no one else could score, and so there was that aspect to it. The other aspect to it that I thought was interesting is I did see the debate break out. Obviously, Jaren Jackson Jr. had a pretty big game. You had 10 points, 11 rebounds, 5 blocks, 3 assists, a steal, 4 turns. The first Grizzly since Powell to get a double-double that included 5 blocks. So that's, like, impressive. And yet he's not in there at the end of the game. And so what did we see? But we saw a debate break out. It was certainly in evidence on Twitter about why JB isn't using him at the end of games. And this is exactly, literally, this is exactly what we have been saying about the way that JB is making decisions. that it's great that it, when it works. But as soon as you lose a game and you don't use the lineup that some people think you should have lost, it all comes crashing down on your head. Not crashing down because no one's, you know, saying they should be fired today or anything. But immediately there is, I don't get this at all. I don't understand why Jaren Jackson Jr. isn't closing games. And I saw that, you saw that immediately. So let's say it was just a loss, and losses happen. I didn't actually expect them to go undefeated at home, although it was their first loss at home. Some of these games against teams that are basically your equivalent, you're going to win, and some you're going to lose, and that's all fine. But there were some interesting aspects to it, and I thought this Jaren Jackson thing was particularly interesting.
Yeah, I think that's definitely an interesting point that you make. I guess the question I would ask is, we know J.B. Bickerstaff can't go perfect on trying to always push the right buttons, always push the right lineups. But what do you think is a reasonable expectation? Because I don't think it's fair to expect him to be perfect on which lineup to play.
No, I think you're allowed to argue. Part of the fun of the NBA is you're allowed to second guess lineups,
absolutely.
Or debate lineups, or debate. I mean, it's just like with the NFL. What do? We debate play calling, right?
Mostly. Absolutely. You and I are the best at it,
right? And so, in the NBA in particular, what people debate is lineups. And so I get that. I think the question of Jaren Jackson Jr. is an interesting one. And I think I can see the argument on both sides. The argument in terms of playing him is, he's Jaren Jackson Jr. He's the future. He's going to have to learn. Yes, it's a little awkward because they've got Joe Ingles at the four, and that's not a perfect matchup for him. But he's got to learn to be there in crunch time. He's obviously capable of making big plays. Defensively, the opponent's shooting percentage is worse when he is in the game, and so it makes sense at some level. Well, he should be in there, right? But if he'd been in there, he also has, and Ms. Chris Harrington pointed this out in the tweet, he has the worst net rating of the rotation players, and he's foul prone. So is that a player that you want when you're trying to literally, when the goal of the season is to make the playoffs and stay in the playoff race? Is that what you're going to do? Is that a guy that you necessarily have to have on the court? He's very clearly getting minutes and being developed. I don't think there's any question about that. So I don't really think there's a right answer here. And I'm perfectly content with J.B. Bickerstaff, who to me has pushed a lot of the right buttons so far. I'm perfectly happy with him making the call that he made, but it is instructive to me that having made the call that he made, we're already seeing the debate breaking out about usage.
Do you think, do you think this is going to be a situation similar to the one that you've mentioned about with Josh Allen and your Bills, in that if you coming into the season, everybody kind of already formed their opinion one way or the other on J.B. Bickerstaff? Either you were comfortable with the idea, or it seemed like you kind of rolled your eyes. You're like, they should have done a real coaching search, and you should have had all, they should have done this, they should have done that. And it feels like every time the Grizzlies lose a game, those people seem to kind of, well, this wouldn't have happened if we would have had a real coaching search. Do you feel like it's going to be one of those situations all season?
No, and I don't sense that, really. I don't think J.B. – I mean, I think there was – when he was hired, there was some whining from some quarters about how they didn't do a national coaching search. I haven't sensed that that has come back much, and I think people are largely pleased with J.B. So I don't think he's anywhere near as polarizing as Josh Allen. I think he's basically – most people concede that he's done a good job. So – I just think it's what Gary really has pointed out, that this juggling act that he is doing is, by definition, opens you up for second guessing. And even more so, really, when – now, let's be honest, there'll be a little bit of less of this now, because the other news that we learned yesterday is that Dylan Brooks is going to be out for an extended period of time. So there's going to be less, you know, before he was saying it was, do I play Dylan? Do I play Selden? Do I play Marshawn? Do I play? Well, now basically everyone's going to get married, like every able-bodied person, because you couldn't before find enough minutes for Selden and for Marshawn Brooks and for Dylan Brooks. You just couldn't, right? You couldn't find enough to make them all happy, very clearly. Now that Dylan Brooks is gone, everyone's going to be getting plenty of minutes. Heck, you're going to have, you know, DJ Stephens or Yuta Watanabe might get minutes. And so so that part of it's a little bit ameliorated. But I think that it just points out that the nature of the business a little bit is second guessing. And listen, that exact same group won a game against Philadelphia, and people were thrilled. And no one was saying, why wasn't Jaren Jackson in at the end of the game? Last night, they didn't win a game, and people are now saying, why wasn't Jaren Jackson in the game? Of course, he did have a more impressive game. He was pretty much, against Philadelphia, a non-factor. Last night, he was not a non-factor, particularly in the first half. And I can see the argument. To me, I thought when you mentioned Josh Allen, I thought you were going with the question of development versus winning games, right? And it's the question that every NFL team has when they have a rookie quarterback. Are you in it to develop the quarterback, or are you in it to win games? And I don't really even think that – I think in the case of an NFL team, that's a pretty clear choice you have to make, because rookie quarterbacks, period, don't win games, right? They just generally – they just don't win games. And so you are effectively, if you play them, conceding that you're in it for next year, and you're basically in it for the draft pick and development and whatnot at the cost of winning games. I don't think that choice is so clear, or really even is a choice. Like, very clearly, Jaren Jackson Jr. contributes to winning. So – and he's getting plenty of minutes, and he's being developed, you know, totally appropriately. And so I don't think you have to choose between winning, generally speaking. I don't think you have to choose. Maybe in the final minutes last night you did, but I don't think you have to choose generally between winning and playing Jaren Jackson Jr. You're going to play Jaren Jackson Jr. You're going to win your fair share of games. Listen, I mean, this is the first time. It's funny, Joe Ingles afterwards, he's get this cut. And he's beat up and everything.
Yeah,
else.
But the towel was great.
Yeah, he says, I'm not coming back. You can't make me come back here. I'm not coming back. They play hard. And that's like the ultimate compliment. I mean, he was joking, obviously. But that is, in the end, I understand it was a disappointing loss. But in the end, like, that's exactly what you had hoped that the Grizzlies would be this year. This team that was hard to play against. And last night was a game where they weren't making shots. Not that they do typically make shots. They weren't making shots. And for the first time ever, they lost the turnover battle. And it was only 16-15, but those 16 turnovers that they gave up led to 24 points by Utah. And in many ways, that made the difference. So I'm not going to get upset about that game. I'm not going to certainly get on JB about that game. He's got a real challenge ahead of him now without Dylan Brooks and as they go to Milwaukee. But fundamentally, I'm happy with where they are. Aren't you happy with where they are?
Yeah, I mean, to me, last night really boiled down to – you remember how last week we talked about, you know, the game where Mike and Mark combined to go, I think, like 6-29. Like, you and I just discussed, like, I'm sorry, like, statistically, if that happens, they're probably going to get beat almost every single night. Last night, they shoot 4-24 from three. Like, to me, like, I don't want to, like, oversimplify it, but I really feel like it comes down to if you shoot 4-24 from three, you're probably not going to win many games in the NBA. They still held their opponent under 100 points.
No, and they've counted on, listen, why have they won? They've won because Garrett Temple has hit timely threes,
yes,
right?
Yes, 0-4 last night.
Because Shelvin Mack has,
yep,
for the longest time, he was shooting above 50% from three. What was Shelvin Mack from three last night?
0-3
last night. So you're going to need those players. It's like I said, it's Mike Conley was the only one hitting threes. He was, what, three of eight.
And Marshawn hit one of two. Those were the four.
And that was it. And so but missed shots. They got off to a bad start. They missed shots. And they were playing a team that is basically their equivalent. And so, you know, you're not going to win all those games. And there you are. And so, yes, I was not particularly. You're disappointed because you want, you know, you'd love them to win. You'd love them to finish up this homestand with yet another win. But they didn't. And now they go to Milwaukee that has been like really blazing start to start the season, but they split their last six, I think. And I don't expect them to win that game, but you know, it's a long season.
And then as we turn our attention again, you are heading down to Baton Rouge again tonight. The Tigers take on the LSU Tigers. That game is in Baton Rouge. You can see that on the SEC Network. Currently, the Tigers, about a 10.5-point underdog. Jeff, according to KenPom, the projected score tonight would be an LSU win 86-77. What are your thoughts going into tonight down in Baton Rouge?
Well, that was interesting. And I think we're going to hear from Penny Hardaway in a minute. But he was asked about this game and he talked about it. He said he loved the game. He said it's an opportunity. He said a chance to make some noise. You know, when he was an AAU coach, he'd always schedule the hardest, whatever else. To me, this seems like, I mean, if they could somehow pull this off, it would be, I mean, astonishing and a remarkable accomplishment for a team that is basically just starting to figure out and, you know, starts an all freshman backcourt that isn't, Duke's backcourt. So I don't have any great hope that they're going to win tonight. I think the odds are they will lose. I mean, as you pointed out, I asked Gary yesterday, and we're going to talk to Gary in a little bit here. Here are three scenarios. One, they win because the Tigers win.
Yep.
Two, they lose by less than 10, by double digits.
Yep.
Or they lose by single digits.
Yep.
Or three, they lose by double digits.
Mm-hmm.
What's the most likely scenario? And Gary said the most likely scenario is they lose by double digits. And now you tell me that Las Vegas says the most likely scenario is they lose by double digits. You have a team that has more talent than you, that's further along in their rebuilding process, And you've got, you know, all freshman backcourt that struggled in their first game against Tennessee Tech at home, and now they're playing a really good team in a place where it will be pretty crazy on the road. Well, that doesn't seem like a recipe for success. But Penny was he seemed to love the idea, you know. It certainly will be an interesting test. I think the other interesting part of this is going to be what will the fan reaction be? It is my contention that almost nothing is going to turn off the, they could lose by 27 tonight, right?
Okay.
And it won't matter. It'll be, oh, gosh, I hope, you know, they figure it out. They got a ways to go, like that. But it won't matter. And I don't think... I'm going to call it the Penny Moon. I don't think the Penny Moon ends, you know. I think the Penny Moon is 2 years, you know. I don't think anyone starts to worry much about actual game. Of course, everybody wants them to win and play well and develop and whatever else. I don't think anyone really starts to worry about results and until certainly next year and probably well into next year. I can't remember Josh's first year where people were down on Josh, or from Cal's first year where people were down on Cal. I can remember, and I don't know what year it was, where Josh goes to Oklahoma State. I think it was with the Four Kings at that point, gets destroyed by 20-something. And then, yeah, but then people are up in arms. But one of the things, you know, I'm writing this sort of, I don't know that it'll actually be a book, but I'm writing this sort of chapter-by-chapter series about this season as it unfolds for the Daily Memphian. That's going to, you know, every Monday I'm going to have something up. And at some point, I think one of the things I'll write about is the reaction to losses. You know, what is radio? We know with Memphis, or at least nationally, I think it's a little bit of a bad rap. But nationally, Memphis has this reputation for being really hard on its basketball team when they lose. I'll be interested to see what the reaction is when they lose this one. I actually think what the difference between Memphis and other cities in that regard is every city is critical of the team that it most cares about when it loses, right?
Sure.
Particularly when it loses badly. For Memphis, it just happens that team is a college basketball team. So, yes, Memphis basketball is, quote-unquote, Memphis radio and callers, whatever, are harder on Memphis basketball than if you went to Cincinnati and listened to, even if it was a down year for Cincinnati, or let's say Cincinnati football. They're having a good year this year, but they've had a series of not great years. You know, before that, certainly under the last years of Tuberville. And you wouldn't hear the Cincinnati radio up in arms about the Bearcats because they don't care about the Bearcats, relatively speaking. Are they ripping the Bengals or whoever? Yeah, Andy Dalton, sure. And it's just here that one of the teams that we care most about is the Tigers. And I'll be interested to see what that feels like tomorrow if they do lose. I'll also be interested to see how this freshman backcourt responds and, you know, how Tyler Harris responds. He very clearly, you know, he went scoreless in the last game. Mike Parks is going to play. He's not going to start. They're going to keep the same starting lineup. But it's an interesting test. I think it's a little bit of an early test for this team, a little bit of too big a test too soon. But it will be, it'll certainly be interesting to see how they respond. Do you want to play a little Penny's media availability yesterday so people can get a sense of it?
I'm ready when you are.
All right, let's do that. Here's Penny Hardaway.
Still don't know. Yeah, I feel like how you feel, so I really don't know what's going on, but we're still waiting patiently. Hopefully we'll get it, the news, good news, before tomorrow's game.
Big man gonna start tomorrow night? Big man.
Mike, no, we're going to stay with the same starting lineup right now. Mike will play, but we're trying to work him back in. He'll get some minutes for sure.
He's had a decent week of practice since the last game.
Yeah, Mike, he actually looks good. You know, that week off, he really worked hard. We have some things that we can do with him in the pool. We have an underwater pool, and we have this thing called an Alter G where it can take the weight off of him, and he can still condition. So he came back and had fresh legs on the floor, so he looks really good.
What did you take away from that first game here to turn this one?
Well, we took away that if we turn the ball over the way we turn the ball over and foul the way we foul and lose a rebounding game against a more superior team like we're going to see, it could be a loss. So, and what we worked on is protecting the ball, boxing out, trying to win the free throw game, and and defending without fouling. You know, that's what we've been really working on.
Is there a lot of film work? How'd you go through it? Did you?
Yeah, there's been a lot of film work. I watched the Tennessee Tech game over and over again to see our tendencies, our practices every day. Watched LSU's, both their games against Southeast Louisiana and North Carolina Greensboro. And I watched those games three times just to try to find tendencies or whatever. And the same thing is constant with them. They're just going to crash the glass and be tough all night, and we have to do the same thing. We have some areas where we just give one effort, and it needs to be multiple efforts. And you can't go on the road and not – and fight. We have to fight.
Only 11 free throws. You only shot 11 free throws. The guards have to get to the rim more than settle them for the
Yeah, days. Absolutely. And that's what I talked to them about. There's a lot of opportunities on film where we see we can get to the basket, and we choose to throw it out for a three. I mean, we want to shoot our fair share of those because we can make them. We've proven that we can make them. The last game, we just didn't. But we played good enough defense to win the game. But we have to win the free throw game. We got to get 25 free throws a game. I feel like we have to throw the ball inside, and our bigs have to be dominant down there and at least get fouled. And our guards got to take advantage of getting to the basket and getting fouled as well.
You mentioned this thing about the rebounding. Do you think Mike can make that much of a difference to what you do, or are you just going to try to work him in?
No, he definitely can make that big of a difference. I watched the game against them last year here against LSU, and he was very dominant on the glass. He had a really good game in that game. So what he does is consistent. He hustles, and he brings that energy every day, so it's going to be some good stuff to happen for us. But we were small a lot in that game against Tennessee Tech, and they were larger, and they were big. And the same thing with LSU, they're going to be bigger. Our smalls just have to box out. You know, they have to box out and get those guys coming over our backs. If we do that and stay disciplined, we'll be okay. Nas is complete talent. He's a guy that's inside-outside guy, can handle the ball, can shoot, can post. good defender as well as far as at the rim. He's a pro.
How do you guys plan on slowing down Tremont Waters? He's pretty fast.
Yeah, Tremont is a really good player. I've known him for about 4 or 5 years now because I coached against him in AAU, and he's always been a special player. He knows what he can do. He's very aggressive on both ends of the floor, and we just have to make him uncomfortable the entire game, if you can do that. That's what we're going to try to do, is just, you know, contested jump shots, keep him in front of us as best we can, and when he goes to the basket, we got to make him make good decisions.
When you watch a film of LSU, is there a particular player that kind of concerns you more on the scout report?
I don't think it's one particular player. You have to say Tremont, because he came in here last year as a freshman and played really well against the Tigers. But he's the head of the snake, but they have so many players that are just all-out hustle. And that wins you basketball games, especially at home. They're in the top 25 in front of 12,000 people. It's going to be a crazy environment. And we just look at their entire team as something that we have to deal with, not just one person. But if it is one, it would be Tremont.
How was Tyler Harris's confidence in his shot after
the last game? Tyler's confidence will never be shook. I'm sure he's, you know, understands that was just one game. And I don't think we'll ever see that again with him going over from the field. You know, he has so much pride, and he's lived in a gym. You know, I would never be concerned about his confidence.
Well, speaking of that, you know, going on the road, logistically for you, this is your first team, college team, to take on the road into what should be a very hostile environment. Mm-hmm. And outside of what happens in the game, what are you looking for your team, how they should respond to you?
Well, I'm looking for a lot of things. I'm looking for toughness. I'm looking for multiple efforts. I'm looking for who's going to be first to the floor. I'm looking for who's going to outwork their man and not be outworked. I'm looking for all those toughness things that you have to be able to do on the defensive end. And offensively, getting to the basket and getting a foul, not settling for a jump shot, rebounding the ball, tough rebounds, and then, you know, playing strong the entire game. I'm looking for that then for the entire game from everyone.
How about handling the crowd environment?
Well, that's going to be, you know, a challenge within itself because, you know, the hometown crowd could get rowdy. But if you believe in our system and what we've built, and we're definitely well prepared, we'll be okay.
When you saw the schedule came out, you saw you're going to have to go to LSU mm-hmm. second of the year, did you think that this, what did you think? Did you think it would be a good chance to establish what this program is going to be under you? Did you?
Exactly. That's exactly what I thought. No, I was excited because if you know me, since I've, you know, been a coach, I've always tried to schedule the toughest games in-state, out-of-state, to try to go play the best talent in AAU. And now nothing changes. When I see a team like LSU on the schedule in the second game of the year, it's an opportunity for us to go and make noise. And I always relish those moments.
That was Penny Hardaway yesterday from his media availability. Anything stick out to you, Jeff?
No, it's like I said. I think the fact that he is really seeming to embrace it. Scheduled. And it was a game that was scheduled before he got there. But he is embracing it, and he's exactly right. We will certainly get a sense very early. I mean, truth of the matter is, they have a stretch now of games, a really tough stretch of games where, you know, Yale is looking very good. South Dakota State is a very good team. Oklahoma State, forget just LSU, which I think a lot of people have chalked up as a loss. They got a really tough stretch of games coming very early for a very young team. And so this whole, like this Penny thing now, it's been a lot of fun. And now we get to see what the early team is going to look like. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and we'll ask Chief P about all of this and more when we return. It's Jeff Gawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
You want to have a delicious, exquisitely prepared Thanksgiving dinner that you and your family will remember well after the day is done? Go to Bounty on Broad. That's right. Chef Russell Casey would like everyone to know that Bounty on Broad will be open Thanksgiving Day. So forget shopping and then working over the stove all day and then doing all those stacked up dishes. Spend all that time with your family instead. Bounty will be serving a special Thanksgiving menu in their beautiful restaurant with their legendary farm-to-table touch. In addition to that, Bounty is partnering with the Family Safety Center, an organization that's dedicated to removing individuals from domestic violence situations. Bounty on Broad will be providing survivors a special family meal Thanksgiving morning, and then we'll be collecting donations for the nonprofit the remainder of the day. That's the kind of generous, public-spirited place that the restaurant is. Bounty is located at 2519 Broad Avenue. Call them today to make a reservation at 901-410-8131. this Thanksgiving, do something unforgettable for your family and for other families, too.
It's getting cold outside, and what better way to entertain the family than to hit the track at Audubon Indoor Speedway? Audubon tracks are inspired by real road race courses, but way cooler because they're indoors and climate-controlled. And Audubon's fully electric Italian-made carts are ultra-modern, fun to drive, and fast with speeds up to 50 miles per hour. Not your dad's rattly carts of old, more like electric Lamborghinis. Mondays through Thursdays, get one free race for every two you buy. I guarantee a trip to Audubon will change the way you think about your weekdays. Audubon Indoor Speedway events. Fast, fun, cool.
Are you ready for fall leaves, hoodies, pumpkins, and cool weather? Hi, this is Lauren Choate with Choate's Air Conditioning, Heating, and Plumbing. Call Choate's today to schedule your $60 furnace tune-up to make sure your heater is ready for the cold months ahead. Our $60 furnace tune-up includes a 15-point safety inspection with a free camera inspection of your heat exchanger to make sure it is not leaking any dangerous carbon monoxide. Right now is also a great time to get your air ducts cleaned and to make sure your indoor air quality is top-notch. Don't forget, Choate's is also there for all your plumbing needs. From our $99 drain cleanings, our tankless water heater financing specials, or visit one of our two kitchen and bath showrooms for any of your remodel ideas. And remember, Choate's, let our family serve your family.
Many people think the key to winter weather driving is getting better traction, so your car will go when you want it to. And stopping, it's not all that it's cracked up to be. Unless, of course, you actually need to stop. And then it's exactly what you want to happen. You know, to avoid cracking up your car.
Let the Pep Boys pros improve your stopping power, and you'll have more worry-free power shopping. We'll inspect your brakes for free. Plus, if they need replaced, get up to $120 off a Wagner Premium Brake Service through November 21st. Joy to the drive. Only at Pep Boys. Up to $60 per axle after mail-in rebate. See restrictions at PepBoys.com.
Offer not valid in all states or where prohibited by law. Loans are subject to lender approval. See website for details.
Hey, man, where'd you get all that extra cash?
Yo, keep it down. I went online to 57cash.com yesterday, and bam!
Whoa.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. $4,000 was in my account today.
Wait a minute. 57cash.com helped you get 4K just like that?
You know it! 57cash.com's lenders provide fast cash personal loans for up to $5,000 for people like me with any type of credit.
Man, I'm always short on cash. Do you think 57cash.com will give me the cash I need fast?
If you need extra cash fast, go to 57cash.com. Just have a checking account and a regular source of income. Go to 57cash.com and you can get the loan you need now, regardless of your credit. Go to 57cash.com from your smartphone or computer to get the cash you need. Visit 57cash.com. Type www.57cash.com directly into the address bar. That's 57cash.com. 57cash.com.
And for my final feat of magic, I will now give myself more chances to win with Keno to go. On the count of three. One, two, three.
That's not magic. All you did was add Bullseye. Look, I just got more chances to win too, and I don't even believe in magic.
It's not magic. It's Keno to go with Bullseye, the easy way to get more chances to win. Only from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. Please play responsibly. Get ready to get your game on with the Tennessee Lottery and fill up your day with fun. Like when you need to upgrade the fun on that road trip. When you could use a little Did I Just Win $50 fun.
Woo! Yeah!
Or when you'd like to add a side of fun to that next snack.
Wow, good.
Would you like some fun with that?
Well, yeah.
Then play the Tennessee Lottery. And for just a dollar or two, you can get your game on. Please remember, play responsibly.
Friday and Saturday only at the Kroger Digital Sale. Select varieties of Post cereal are only 99 cents. Just download your digital coupon from Kroger.com.
92.9 FM, 680 AM, and 92.9ESPN.com. This is the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM, ESPN.
So it has been a rainy stretch of days here in Memphis, Tennessee. And I hope you haven't been stressed out about the possibility of water coming into your home. Maybe into your basement or your garage or your crawl space. Bad enough to have miserable, soggy weather, but then have that stress on top of it. There's no need for that because you can call Redeemers Group and they will send someone out to do a free inspection. The best case, they'll tell you, hey, you got nothing to worry about. But if you got a problem, they'll fix the problem. A friend of mine recently had them out, sealed up their basement. Problem no more. Don't worry about water making its way into your house. Redeemers Group's a local company serving Memphis and the Mid-South for more than a decade. They handle foundation repair, crawl space repair, basement waterproofing, concrete leveling, all that sort of thing. The phone number is 541-8765, 541-8765. Don't live with the stress of wondering whether water is going to be making it into your house when it is pouring rain. Call Redeemers Group, 541-8765, or on the web, redeemersgroup.com. Joined now by Gary Parrish. Gary Parrish is host of the Gary Parrish Show from 4 to 6. Every single day on this radio station, he's the National College Basketball Columnist for CBSSports.com. He is a multiple Emmy-winning television personality, rising star in the field of meteorology, and he joins me now. GP, how are you?
I'm good. You all right?
I'm good. I'm driving to Baton Rouge.
Have fun. I've never driven to Baton Rouge. I've been to
now,
Baton Rouge.
If you go to Baton Rouge, do you fly to Baton Rouge, too? Like, is that what, like, I know you scoff at my practice of driving everywhere. If you had to cover a game at LSU, would you fly?
You know what? I take back what I said. I've made the drive to Baton Rouge. I would probably fly, given that I work for CBS now, and they don't care if you fly anywhere. But I have made the drive to Baton Rouge once upon a time when I did work for CBS. I went to Nick Saban's first game as the Alabama coach at LSU. It was his first return to LSU. And the reason I know I drove is because I drove down on a Friday and met up with Wright, our buddy who lives in Oxford, yeah, of course, and works for ESPN. He was there as well, and he used to work in New Orleans. So the plan was Wright and I were going to go out Friday night, and that got completely out of hand. And then on Saturday, we were going to go to the game. It kicked off, I want to say it was the 2:30 Central big CBS game. So we were going to do the game, write our columns, and then we were going to go to New Orleans and stay the night in New Orleans. And so we drove from Baton Rouge to New Orleans, and that got completely out of hand. And we woke up on Sunday, and we both had to drive home, and we had to stop at like a boating dock or something because Wright was about to run out of gas. On the way out of New Orleans, on the way back to Memphis, and I missed my niece's birthday party because I'll just blame Wright Thompson if you don't mind. I woke up the Sunday morning after that night with Wright in New Orleans with a pack of cigarettes in my pocket. I've never smoked in my life. Still, I've never smoked even like one cigarette. It's just something I've never done. And yet I had a pack of cigarettes in my pocket. I still don't have any idea.
Wright is legendary in that regard. And New Orleans also legendary in that regard. And so you put them together, and I can see why that would happen. It's interesting, as you mentioned it, you think about Nick Saban. When he was hired at LSU, people wondered, like, what the hell LSU was doing. It was basically a 500 coach from Michigan State who was not going to fit in the South. Like, That was the and it's interesting to me that, and this isn't what I want to talk about. I want to get to the LSU game. I want to get to the Kansas game, et cetera. But it's interesting to me that the two greatest football coaches now, one in college and one in the NFL, both started out as, well, Nick wasn't a failure, but he was not considered a, you know, rising star necessarily. It was kind of, you know, he got Belichick was a failure. Belichick was fired. And I don't know whether you can do that. I guess you can in Quinn Snyder is an example of how you can sort of flounder and then be something else in basketball. But it is interesting that neither one of those guys, I mean, you always say you can tell right away if someone's got it, right? And yet I don't think you would have known right away that Belichick had it or that Saban had it and they're the greatest ever or among the greatest ever.
I think somebody must have known, right? And you'll hear that about coaches sometimes, like, hey, let me tell you who's really good. Who, you know, there's a guy in a league, and he's just got a bad job. And so it's difficult to flourish. But, like, people, his peers know that he's great.
Right.
You'll hear that sometimes. And I imagine there was some of that with Saban and some of that with Belichick. Like, listen, this first job hasn't worked out so well, but this guy's got the goods. What's especially interesting about them is that they're both awkward, at least publicly awkward.
Right.
I can't speak to Nick Saban on a personal level. I've never been around him on a personal level. But certainly publicly he's awkward. But I have heard on a personal level he's pretty good, or he can be if he wants to be. And I don't know if you saw this mic'd up thing that Belichick was on a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, fantastic.
It was fantastic because it's like a glimpse of him that we never see. I mean, Belichick in those press conferences looked like he's incapable of speaking, like that he couldn't possibly hold a conversation with another human being. And yet when he's just mic'd up and he's talking to not only his own players and staff, but I thought it was interesting, like the man who like is just on the sideline, just a guy. And he walked up to him. He's like, "Hey, do you have another pen?" And the guy pulled out a pen or a marker or something.
He said, do you have another Sharpie? Right.
Yeah, and he was like, "Thank you." I just noticed him being very kind to everybody and very normal to everybody. And I just thought it was interesting. So perhaps they can turn it on and then turn it off. But their public personas are not very personable, and yet they are the best at what they do. I mean, they really might be the best. We might be talking about, I think Saban is the greatest college coach of all time, and I'm not a historian on the NFL, but it seems to me you could make a very reasonable argument that Belichick's the best professional coach of all time.
The other thing that struck me about the Belichick thing was literally he'd be this animated, you know, whatever, he'd tell the defense, you guys are the pass rushers, exact. But then when the Patriots would score a touchdown, you could not tell. Like, he did not. Can you imagine being on? Can you imagine being a head coach and your team is scoring touchdowns and you don't even show the slightest flicker of emotion? Like, that was amazing. Like, literally, he was animated all the time, unless his team scored a touchdown, in which case you could not have. Like, it was as if they were on TV timeout or something.
Nothing. And perhaps that's among the reasons why, like, there's at least a reported issue or has been between he and Tom Brady. Can you imagine Tom Brady being called by some the greatest quarterback of all time? I realize not everybody subscribes to that, but he's certainly like in that conversation, and yet you can't make your coach even smile. Like, it must wear you out, right?
I just think he doesn't think it's worth. I don't think it is anything. I'm not going to celebrate a Tom Brady touchdown. I think it's just.
No, I don't mean that.
But
I don't mean that he's. Consciously saying, I'm not going to celebrate a Tom Brady touchdown, but like Tom Brady still must see it the same way. You know, like,
right.
yo, everybody in the world thinks I'm the best, and my coach won't even smile at me. In fact, the only interaction we saw between Belichick and Brady is when Brady throws the stupid pass. It, like, he clearly just flies it over one receiver, and it gets to the next. And Belichick, like, it seems anxious to ask him, yo, who are you throwing that to? But like all the other stuff, we don't see it. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm just saying we didn't see it. I perhaps I'm projecting, but if I were Tom Brady and I am a beautiful human being married to another beautiful human being, worth a bazillion dollars, got all these rings, and people think that I'm the greatest quarterback of all time, and my coach barely acknowledges my success publicly or on the sideline, it would get to me at some point, certainly.
It reminds me of my marriage, honestly. Like, everyone else, it's like, hey, people come up to me and say I'm great and whatever else. They like talking to me, and they think I'm charming, and you're the only person. I mean, and now we're great friends or whatever. I think it's a lot of marriages. And like, what?
You can't
acknowledge how great I am? You probably have the same issue. Yeah.
You don't think I've had that conversation a million times?
Everyone loves me but the one who's supposed to love me. Right.
Yeah, like, yo, I can jump on Twitter, and it's nothing but people telling me how smart I am and how funny I am, and you're asking me why I didn't do the dishes? What are we doing here? And then Kelly can, like, totally flip it around and be like, everybody who comes in the store tells me how great
loves
I am.
Me, and
how
exactly. And all you do is why they close.
And you're asking me why I didn't do the dishes. And I'm like, listen, somebody needs to do the dishes. You know, either way, the dishes need to get done. So, like, I don't know that that's
everybody's like a marriage. That's my point, though. It's like a marriage.
Yeah.
They're like a marriage.
I don't know if it's everybody's marriage, but I think it's pretty common.
Like, okay, before I get to the Tigers, Kansas played last night. Deidre Glosson, All-American, went scoreless. What in the world, Gary?
Bill Self said afterwards, that's the worst game Deidre will ever play in his entire life, including when he's 55 and playing a pickup game somewhere. Like, he was just bad. It wasn't even – because when you see that, you go, ooh, maybe it was foul trouble or something. But it wasn't that. It was just – he was just bad. And the other thing that's interesting about Kansas is because even today, if you call that staff and ask them who's your best player, they say Deidre Glosson every time. And Deidre was obviously terrific in the opener, 20 points. 14 rebounds and six.
But he shot badly in the opener, even in the opener.
Yeah, he did. He was inefficient in the opener.
He was inefficient.
What's interesting about the way Kansas at least play? I didn't watch all of last night's game. I watched some, but certainly against Michigan State, they don't play through Deidrick. They play through Udoka Azubuike, and they sort of trust Deidrick to go get his on his own. Like, a lot of Deidrick's points are going to be offensive rebounds. And, you know, free throw line stuff. But they still think he's going to put up big numbers. But they're trying to get the ball to Doak on most of their offensive possessions. And so I thought that was interesting that though Deidrick is widely regarded as their best player, they don't play through him as much as they play through Doak because he is such an impossible matchup because he's so big, so strong, and just very good. The other thing about Kansas is, yeah, Deidrick wasn't good last night, but for the second straight game, a Memphis kid led him in scoring. It was LaJarrell Vick with 32 points.
Right.
And, you know, I think three of their top seven or eight players are from Memphis. And they are maybe not the most talented team in the country because that seems to be Duke, thanks to Zion Williams and RJ Barrett and Cam Reddish, but they're certainly the deepest. And so it doesn't really matter that much, particularly against a team like Vermont, when, you know, you can have your best player go scoreless and still win because you've got a roster filled with Quentin Grimes, Devon Dodson, LaJarrell Vick, Udoka Azubuike. I mean, they are really loaded where they can afford. Like, at Memphis, Deidrick was going to go get big numbers basically every game because there was nobody else to get them. At Kansas, if he's playing poorly, they can just start going somewhere else, and they did.
But right now, would you not, right now, if you were projecting a new All-American team and picking a new, who will be the first team All-American team at the end of the year, you would not put Deidrick on it, would you?
I would. I mean, you know, like, listen, last night was bad, but I'm just going to trust the coaches. What we've seen of Deidrick Glosson is 80 minutes of basketball. 80 minutes. They've seen him every day for more than a year. And that staff to a man, that athletic department to a person, will tell you Deidrick Glosson is our best player. Deidrick Glosson is going to be Big 12 Player of the Year. So if Kansas is going to be a one seed in the NCAA tournament, and they've been a one or a two seed, this is crazy. They've been a one or a two seed in the NCAA tournament, like, I want to say 10 straight years, 9 straight years, something like that. If they're going to be that again, and there's no reason to think they won't, and everybody connected to that program says Deidrick is the Big 12 Player of the Year, I'm just going to trust that Deidrick will be a first-team All-American.
Zion Williamson had another big game over the weekend. Ridiculous numbers. Right now, if you could have – you have an NBA team, and you could have either – you could have Zion Williamson, or you could have any of the top five players picked in this current – the draft that just went past. Where would he go in a redraft? In the Gary Perry draft.
Because we're getting into that range where, okay, like Zion, according to most draft people, didn't make a lot of sense coming out of high school because he's a 6'6 power forward. And we just don't draft 6'6 power forwards, number one, overall. But, you know, what we've seen through these two games is that he's a 6'6 something we'd never seen before. He's putting the ball on the floor. He seems to have the ability to knock down a jumper. He's the freakish of freak athletes. He's built like nobody. Jay Billis said this, and I think it's right. and Jay would know better than I. Jay said we've never seen a basketball player like Zion Williamson in the history of basketball at any level.
Right.
And I mean, he's 6'6", 285, but puts his chin on the rim. I mean, I said this last week to you. I saw somebody tweet. If he were in the NBA right now, he would be the second heaviest player in the NBA. And yet he puts his chin on the rim. So what happens, and I talked to Brendan Haywood about this last week, what happens when he gets, when he slims down? You know, it's remarkable because you watch all these college players. Like, go look at Derrick Rose at 18, and even Derrick Rose now as an older man. They don't look the same. LeBron at 18 and LeBron at 34. LeBron at 34 is in way better shape than LeBron at 18. Because, you know, you get a chef and you're just on a strict everything as opposed to eating gummy bears. And so what happens when Zion, becomes who he's going to be? You know, and he's not 285 anymore. He's 240. Or I don't know where he wants to play at. But the point is, he could become an even better athlete than he is right now, and he's like a top 1% athlete right now. And so I guess I say all that to say this. I really like this past draft, and I don't know that I would trade any of the top 5 picks for Zion at this moment because it's so early. But he's
how would
very
you not? Like, I don't understand. Like, wouldn't you rather have Zion than Marvin Bagley? Like, he's already putting up bigger numbers than Marvin Bagley did. Like, wouldn't you? Like, Marvin Bagley's great.
The argument for Zion is, like, he's a once-in-a-generation type thing. And we don't know exactly what this thing is, but we've never seen anything like it. The argument against him is he's a 6'6 forward. And, like, at some point that catches up to you. But he is doing at the collegiate level exactly what he did at the high school level, which is just physically overwhelm everybody. I'll tell you this. I'm doing a 2019 NBA mock draft tomorrow, or maybe Thursday, and I will have Zion Williamson as the number one pick in the draft. Because I think the other obvious option is his teammate, R.J. Barrett. And R.J. reminds, and this is a bad comparison, so I don't mean it like apples to apples, but Shabazz Muhammad was once upon a time consensus number one player in his high school class, and then, you know, an All-American level guy in college. He was great at UCLA. But it was all just like, put your head down and get to the rim. And he could do that very well. But it did not translate to the NBA. And I'm worried that RJ's better than Shabazz. I hope that's clear. But it's still a little bit, he just scores everything at the rim. He just gets to the rim over and over again. And I don't know if that is, from somebody his size, I don't know if that's a translatable NBA skill as much as some other obvious skills are, like shooting or shot blocking or whatever. And so I'm going to have Zion going first in the draft. I would not have had that 2 weeks ago, but I'll have it tomorrow.
Tigers obviously play at Baton Rouge tonight. That's why I'm driving down there at this very moment. Penny sounded excited about this game. Let me ask you this. If Penny were in charge of schedule, like if you didn't schedule 2 years in advance, do you think he would have scheduled this game this early? Because it strikes me as too big. In a sense, it's like, who cares? But it's just, it strikes me as too good a team and too different environment too early in the season.
He strikes me as the type who might have done it. I would not have done it, but he might have. Evidence being that he went out and scheduled the Texas Tech game late. I mean, the only reason to go schedule Texas Tech that's so late in the calendar, not when the game is played, but when the game was scheduled, is if you're just trying to get as many good games as you can get. Because the truth is, especially given the way the AAC has gotten off to a rough start, it's going to be very difficult for Memphis to be in the at-large conversation unless they go out and do some of this stuff. Like win at LSU, beat Villanova, beat Texas Tech. You're going to have so few quad one opportunities in the league that getting an at-large resume is going to be difficult. You're going to have to be very good with very few slip-ups in your league. And so a lot of – I'll just tell the story. Back when Ben Howland was at UCLA, I went out there, and I don't even remember to do what exactly. But I ended up, they were playing Oregon the next day. And I ended up sitting in the office with Ben and his staff all night watching film of Oregon. And at some point on that night, one of his former assistants, who was now a head coach, called. And Ben said, you know, Ben paused the film, and he said, excuse me, I have to take this phone call. So he takes the call, and I don't hear what's on the other end, but I can sort of piece it together. The coach on the other end is saying, he just lost a game. And Ben said, oh, really, you got beat by 20, huh? Who'd you play? And the guy was like, Michigan or something like that. And this guy was a mid-major coach. And Ben said, I told you 100 times, why are you even playing that game? At the end of the season, none of your fans are going to know what your strength of schedule ranking was, but they'll know exactly what your win total was and what your loss total was. Don't put that on yourself. And that is something that coaches, outside of that guy and maybe Tom Izzo, subscribe to. Like, hey, let's get the win total as good as we can get it and worry about everything else later. And yet Penny quite clearly did not do that with this first schedule. Again, the LSU game was done way before he got the job, but the Texas Tech game, that was one you did not have to do. He wanted to go do it. And it is, at least on paper, probably an L. And so this is a very difficult second game, not just of your season, but second game of your career at LSU. And they've got better talent, more experience, home court advantage. There's almost nothing that you would check the box for Memphis in terms of an advantage heading into it. But the way he seems to look at it, and he said this yesterday, was it's an opportunity to make some noise. And that is true. You can't play Troy tonight or Southeastern Louisiana tonight and make some noise. Nobody even notices outside of Memphis. But you go win at LSU. There is not a currently unranked team in the country with a win over a ranked team. And we're a week into the season. But Memphis has a chance to do that tonight. And I don't think they will. You know, there's a reason LSU is significantly favored. But it is an opportunity to do that. And if you view it that way, all upside, no real downside, then go take your best shot.
It makes total sense to me to schedule like this if you have a team that you think is going to make the tournament anyway, and it's going to be good, and you want the opportunity to collect some quality wins and to be tested when they get to the tournament. I think this early in a career and when a team is this young and sort of just being learning to play this way together, I think it's a good deal more. I would not do it. Let's just say
I wouldn't do it because here's the truth. Tonight, I think going forward, Penny, Tyler Harris, Alex Lomax, they are going to win a whole lot of games and accomplish a whole lot of things and see a whole lot of stuff. Tonight, they will all see something they've never seen before. They will all be involved in something they've never been involved before. You know, a game on national television, hostile environment against a top 25 team where the other team is significantly more talented than you. Penny's never been involved in that. Tyler has never been involved in that, except for maybe when he played East. And Alex Lomax has never been involved in that. So it's a first-time deal for a lot of the key characters involved. But it'll be fun. Like, I'm honestly trying to figure out if I want to record my last segment today, record Dinner to Go, so I can get home in time for the 6 o'clock tip-off. Because I'm looking forward to watching the game, even if, like I told you yesterday, and I don't say this to be anything other than honest, but I hope I'm wrong, obviously. But I think an LSU blowout is more likely than even a Memphis 1-point win. But it is an opportunity to make some noise, and I look forward to watching them take a shot at it.
Meanwhile, and last question, there's a couple things going on at LSU. One, they lost a player to gunshot during the offseason. Off-season? Was it off-season?
Yeah.
And then secondly, they got the Will Wade stuff where he was sort of a little bit implicated in, suggested by recordings that he might have been involved in some things that are nefarious. What's the situation down at LSU right now?
Well, that's the other part of the story is that on one hand, it's a preseason top 25 team that's been rebuilt quickly with a top five recruiting class featuring Naz Reid, who's a 6'9 forward who like made 4 3-pointers the other night, scored 29 points. He's terrific. Tremont Waters, a preseason All-American. I think LSU, from a talent perspective, is a real Final Four dark horse, even if people don't really talk about them that way. You'll see how talented they are tonight. The other thing is they've been going through some off-the-court stuff.